Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Court of Hearts and Hunger, A Wonderland Retelling by Rebecca F. Kenny, narrated by Jessica Jeffries and Benjamin Crow. 1. Clara. The Fae child I'm trying to paint won't sit still. He flits back and forth, butterfly wings moving incessantly. His chubby cheeks dimple, and his round eyes fix on the wide archway leading to Finn's area of our shared shop. His mother, a slim, fawn-coloured fey noblewoman, keeps lassoing him and drawing him back to his chair with tendrils of vine-like magic. He bursts into giggles every time, like it's a game, like he'd be pleased with either outcome, reaching the sparkling candies in Finn's shop or being swirled through the air and planted in his seat again. Finally, I give up trying to paint a traditional portrait of him, and I yield to the true nature of this precious creature of motion and light. Children, Finn tells me, are rare treasures among the Fae. Long-lived as they are, they have no need to reproduce often. In fact, they are only fertile once every few decades. This little one looks about 2 in human years. I don't worry about a perfect still-life image of him. Instead, I focus on capturing his vibrancy, his joy. Once I have a good start, I let him and his mother go to the back garden, where he can expend his energy while I keep working. His little sunshiny face is imprinted in my mind. I reproduce it as closely as I can, but his body, limbs and wings are more impression than precision, vaguely the right shape, but melted into swift swirls of rainbow colour. More splashes of colour dot the canvas around him. When I'm finally satisfied, I rise from my stool, stretching my stiff legs and rolling my neck as I walk to the back door. "You can come in now," I call. The Fae mother doesn't have wings, and from what she has told me, neither does her husband. Their son was born in the fourth turn of a wind year, after a great storm, while a rainbow glimmered in the sky. Finn once told me that a Fae's aspects and powers are determined by the timing and setting of their birth. A strange thing indeed. They must transform magically as they're leaving the womb. The Fae mother holds her little son firmly on her hip as I lead her to the painting. She gazes at the canvas, her lovely features immobile. Over the past few months, ever since Finn and Lyr returned from purging and stabilizing the kingdom, I've learned that the Seelie of the capital are a deliberate, elegant, and reserved species. Those from other areas of the kingdom are often wilder, more mischievous, and more unbridled in the expression of their emotions, but the Fae who live in the royal city of Beanu prize perfection, education, and restraint. They're a haughty, proud, self-important people, much like Lyr. But like him, I've also found that they have depths. Concealment of emotion doesn't equal its absence. Unfortunately, when it comes to the court fae, it's tough to tell whether they like something or not. And it's the agony of the creative to care deeply about the reaction of those who consume one's art. The little one cackles and reaches for the painting. But when his mother doesn't move or speak, I venture, "I can try again, if you don't like this one." Her head whips toward me with an unnatural fae suddenness that makes my heart jerk. "You will not try again."
Very well.
"Your human talent is a marvel." Her eyes glisten. "When I look at this painting, I can feel him. I hear his laugh. I see him fly."
"Then you like it?" I breathe, relieved.
"Oh, good. It will need to dry, and then I will have it framed, wrapped, and delivered to your home."
"Thank you, Clara," she says, "and you may call me Saoirse."
She gave me her name. Living in this city, at the court, I've overheard the names of various Fae called and exchanged in passing, but for a Fae to actually tell a human their name is still a mark of trust and friendship. I press my hand over my heart and repeat the words Lyr taught me and Louisa. "Thank you for the gift of your name, Saoirse." My own eyes are wet and she's blinking hard, though her beautiful features are perfectly calm.
"God stars," drawls a light male voice from the doorway. "Two beautiful women weeping on such a fine day? A travesty! You must excuse me, Saoirse.
because when my darling cries, I am compelled to kiss away her tears.
Phineas pushes himself away from the doorframe and comes to me, taking my face between his long-fingered hands, his rings pressing cool against my flushed cheeks. Despite his casual words, his golden eyes are full of tender concern.
Happy tears, Finn, I assure him. She loves the painting.
He glances over at the canvas, and his eyes widen.
Of course she does. It is a masterpiece. You have captured this one beautifully.
He grins at the boy, and when the child reaches out with plump little hands, Finn snatches him up, twirling him around.
May he have a treat, Saoirse?
Very well.
She nods, a slight smile curving her mouth. Finn carries the child off to the sweet shop, while Saoirse pays me. When I first began accepting commissions, I was hesitant to accept payment for my work, but Finn told me I must learn to recognize my own worth and defend it.
It's a dream come true, really. A life I never thought I could have.
Sometimes I wish I could see Papa again, just to show him what I've created, how I'm making my own money with the art he despised. And then I feel guilty for wanting to see him for that vindictive reason, and no other. I wish I could say I missed my father. But how can I, when my new life with Finn is so full and satisfying? When Louisa isn't travelling with Leah, I get to see her almost every day. And Leah is like my older brother now. The King of Fairy, my brother. And Louisa is his chosen, his queen. After their chosen ceremony last month, they left to travel through the Seelie Kingdom. It's important for them to make appearances together, since not all the Fae are pleased to have a human queen. But I have no doubt Louisa will charm them all with her wit, beauty, and strength. There's another reason for Leah and Louisa's absence as well. When Drosselmeyer sent his captives back through the portal into Fairy, a number of Unseelie arrived along with the Seelie. Leah's guards took the Unseelie into custody, and they were confined in a prison in the south until the kingdom could be stabilized. One of Leah's tasks during this journey will be to meet with each prisoner and decide if they can be sent home to their own kingdom. Personally, I would have them home at once, but I suppose he has his reasons for detaining them. As for me, I don't crave long journeys into the wilder parts of Fairy. I'm happy to live here, quietly with Finn, painting, attending court functions, and occasionally making visits to nearby attractions, like the Whispering Gardens and the Bright Thorn Grove. The longest trip Finn and I have taken was to the Unending Pool. I wanted to see it firsthand, and Finn wanted a few samples of the water, which he collected in charmed casks. The pool is heavily guarded now, and Leah has ended the practice of allowing the Unseelie to access it. That journey was enough excitement for me. I'm done with adventure. The taste of danger I had during our conflict with the Rat King was more than enough. I'm calm, settled, and content. I'm not jealous of Louisa's new status or the attention centered on her, or the fact that I'm merely the human queen's sister to most of Fairy, if they know of me at all. I'm not one bit envious or restless. Not one bit. The bottles of paint clank together as I shove them back into their case rather too forcefully. I've been getting stronger lately, setting aside time in the early mornings for combat training with a sturdy fey woman named Zorai. When I look up, Finn is leaning in the doorway again, arms folded, his pink hair shining in the shafts of afternoon sunlight from the back door. He's dressed in a pale lavender shirt of gauzy silk, open at the neck. A pair of high-waisted black pants hug his long legs. Gumdrop earrings dance from his earlobes, and tiny gemstones glitter along the edges of his ears all the way up to their pointed tips. He watches me with narrowed eyes.
Something wrong, sugar?
Of course not. She loved the painting, and she gave me her name. It was wonderful, and I'm pleased.
I smile brightly at him. He tips back his head with a low laugh.
Oh, sweetness, when will you learn you can't fool me?
You think you know me so well. I give him my best haughty frown, but he only laughs harder.
That look, he says, shaking his head. You and your sister both have that same expression, but I like it better on you.
He paces toward me, a delighted warmth in his eyes.
That look,
as if you're so proud, so far above me, so bravely independent.
My breath catches as he crowds me slowly backward until I'm pressed against the wall beside the back door, which stands open.
"So very lofty,"
he croons, his fingers twirling a lock of my hair.
"So indifferent and completely unaffected by a lowly fae such as myself."
The heat of him courses along my body, the air between us charged like the sky before a lightning storm. He bends his head, warm breath skimming my lips.
"Tell me, brave girl, what is troubling you? I will rectify any problem, provide anything you might require for perfect happiness."
"It's not your job to make me happy," I whisper.
"Oh, but it is."
"I'm not one of your pets, Finn, not an adorable creature to be patted and fed and charmed."
A flicker of irritation in his gaze.
"That's unfair, Clara. Have I ever treated you that way?"
"Maybe, without realizing it. You've encouraged me to stay in this city, apart from a few short excursions."
He sighs, pushing back from me.
"I suppose that's fair. I feared for your safety. The kingdom is still volatile, and it can be unsafe for a human even at the best of times. But if you prefer to be like one of my weasel cats, coming and going as you please, unescorted..."
He winces as if relenting pains him deeply.
"Then you must do it. You are not my prisoner, but my partner. Do anything you like, my love. Go anywhere. But don't blame me if I prowl behind you or hover above you to make sure you're safe."
"And if I don't want you hovering or prowling?" He bites his lip with his sharp teeth.
"Finn," I say sternly.
"You can't wander alone through fairy."
"But if I want to, you'll let me?"
He rocks his head back and groans, his gauzy wings flutter in agitation.
"You are your own master, and I trust that you're wise enough to ensure your safety."
Pleased, I spread both hands over his pectorals, feeling the solid heat of his chest through his thin, silky shirt. "Good boy."
"Fuck,"
he hisses, fire leaping into his eyes.
"Say that again."
"Good boy, Phineas." I move in, pressing my body along his. He's hard under his dark pants, and I smile. "It's been months, and you still want me as much as ever."
"Of course I do. I told you, sugar. It's only you as long as I exist."
He tells me he adores me in 100 ways, calls me love, but he has never formed those 3 exact words. "I love you." And I haven't asked him why. Perhaps I'm afraid to. In spite of the fact that he obviously wants to build a life with me, in spite of his desire for me, his everyday care, and the grandest gesture of his devotion, coming to rescue me from the Rat King's lair. I keep telling myself he doesn't need to say it in those precise words when I already know how he feels about me.
"I have a surprise for you,"
he whispers, kissing my forehead. "I like surprises." I reach for his belt, but he steps back. He's grinning, his eyes sparkling.
"Close your eyes."
I'm about to obey, but a trickle of chiming music announces a customer's entrance into Finn's side of the shop.
"Shit,"
he mutters, striding toward the archway with a fierce, bright smile. "The shop's closed," he announces. "Come back tomorrow." I'm right behind him, and when we enter the sweet shop, I'm surprised to see Dara, chief steward and communique coordinator for the palace. He's an olive-skinned fairy, taller than most, with a permanently downturned, disapproving mouth. His black hair is tucked behind his ears and flows all the way to his waist. His robes are plain and grey, and his only adornment is the royal emblem, a silver dragon pinned to his shoulder.
"I'm afraid this cannot wait until tomorrow," says Dara. "I have pressing business to share, and you are the acting lord of the court in His Majesty's absence, so..."
"I thought that was merely a title."
Phineas yawns, propping his butt against one of the counters. "I didn't think I would actually have to do something. How disappointing."
"Quite disappointing for all of us,"
says the chief steward dryly.
"If you'll come with me, please."
"Now I have to go somewhere? By the old gods, this responsibility is wearisome."
"You too, my lady."
Dara nods to me.
The message pertains to you as well.
The chief steward won't tell us anything more, even though I asked twice during our walk to the palace.
It's something you must hear and see for yourself, Dara says.
Located in the centre of Beanu, surrounded by twisting streets, multicoloured rooftops and cobblestone squares, the palace shines like a glittering golden piece of filigree. The spires at the peaks of its towers are crafted of pure transparent crystal, catching every bit of sunlight, starlight or moonlight, and throwing rainbows or frosty sparkles over the city. I've painted it 3 times, and I still haven't been able to capture its ever-changing beauty. The chief steward takes us through courtyards, past fountains and alcoves, across statue gardens and ballrooms, until we reach a long chamber lined with windows. Several fae are present, and they all seem uncharacteristically agitated, standing in clusters, whispering to each other, watching Dara, Finn and me as we traverse the room.
In this part of the palace, we receive communications of various kinds, the steward says. Through that door is the aviary, where messenger birds arrive and from which they depart. This area over here is devoted to sending and receiving magical messages. Ah, I see some of my creations.
Finn points to a large glass jar full of purple candies.
Melt one on your tongue and think of someone specific, and the words you speak will be instantly echoed in their mind as long as they're within the borders of this kingdom.
A special batch, one I shan't be able to replicate because of the extreme rarity of the ingredients.
We use them sparingly, I assure you, says Dara. For the most part, we rely on the usual means. Messages written with charmed ink, mirror-to-mirror communication, musical transference, wind whispering.
Fascinating, I breathe.
I suppose to a human it must seem so, replies the steward. Just minutes ago we received a very strange communication through an ancient device.
He points to a table in a back corner on which lie a jumble of items, books with cracked leather bindings, rusted sextants, and an enamelled clock with moons and eyes where the numbers should be. In the centre of the table, a round ebony geode sits on a claw-shaped stand. Its stony surface has been cleaved open as if something chomped a giant bite out of the orb. Inside, it's all glittering black crystals, tiny and close set.
This is a mortal sphere,
Phineas says, frowning. I thought they had all been lost or destroyed.
It's an old method of communication, but the former king, your illustrious uncle, insisted we keep one here in the palace, purely for its historical value,
explains Dara.
Unfortunately, it was not properly secured, and it activated just moments ago. The person communicating through this device was none other than the great enemy of fae kind, the hunter, Drosselmeyer.
Alarmed whispers rustle through the fae in the room. Drosselmeyer, former godfather to Louisa and me, hunter of the fae for decades, he's a master sorcerer, and though he can only perform curses, he has managed to be most versatile with his magic, developing maledictions for everything from securing doors to tracking my sister and me to turning fae into creepy automatons.
Drosselmeyer is at peace with us now,
Phineas says, loudly enough for all to hear.
He freed his captives and sent them home. He freed his surviving captives, yes, says the chief steward coolly. Some might say it was more out of necessity than a change of heart. But you would know best, my lord. After all, you have experience with all kinds of beings.
There's a faint disdain and condemnation in the steward's tone. It's not the first time I've sensed that the Fae of Beanu still despise Finn. His uncle banished him from the Seelie court years ago, and to many of the nobles, he's an unseely sympathiser of dubious morals and dreadful habits, too flighty and feral for this city.
What did Drosselmeyer say?
Finn asks.
He said he must speak to King Lear and Queen Louisa, says Dara. Since neither of them are here, I closed down the mortal sphere until I could fetch you myself. It has been decades since any communication passed between this realm and the human lands through a mortal sphere.
He tucks his hands into the long wide sleeves of his robe.
I am not sure we should indulge the Fey Hunter by communicating with him.
But that's not for you to decide, is it? Phineas flashes him a sharp grin. If Drosselmeyer went to the trouble of contacting us, he must have something interesting to say. Don't you think so, darling? He glances at me. I'm still a little stunned, adjusting to the idea that Drosselmeyer has made contact. I didn't think I'd ever hear from him again. He wouldn't try to speak to us unless it was urgent, I agree. We should hear him out.
Exactly.
Finn steps forward and cups both hands beneath the broken geode.
Ah, you used a Phelim spell to seal it. A little clumsy, but effective enough, I suppose.
His fingers tighten briefly on the sphere, and a ripple of rainbow light runs over its surface, glimmering on the facets of the black crystals within.
Mortal spheres and their counterparts, undying spheres, are formed when eclipses occur in both the mortal realm and the fairy realm at the same time,
he explains to me.
As I told you, the realms are two sides of the same coin, with the same heavenly bodies and the same passage of time. We have a mortal sphere from your world, and Drosselmeyer has an undying sphere from fairy, which allows us to communicate briefly across the two realms.
He sets the ball back on its pedestal. Within seconds, tiny lines of black lightning fork inward, branching from the tiny crystals toward a central point of open space inside the geode. They meet and expand, forming a small three-dimensional image of Drosselmeyer's head, drawn in shivering lines of black light that crackle and hiss. He looks as if someone sketched him in charcoal, and he's just as I remember him, narrow-faced and serious, with his neat goatee and spectacles.
Can he see us? I whisper.
Indeed. Can you hear us, Drosselmeyer?
Finn asks. Drosselmeyer's voice issues from the geode, cracked and faint, but discernible.
I can hear you. Hello, Clara.
You asked for Lear and Louisa, but they're unavailable at the moment, I say curtly. Whatever you have to say, you can say to me and Phineas. I can feel Finn's eyes on me, but I don't look at him. I don't feel like exchanging pleasantries with my godfather. He's part of my old life, and seeing him again is a rancid reminder of the mortal world, of my father, and of the person I used to be.
Very well, says Drosselmeyer. I'll make this quick, since I'm not sure how long my orb will last. Undying sphere, my arse.
He sighs.
Since we last saw each other, I've been working to develop a new kind of magic with the help of the stone from the Rat King's scepter. It's more beneficial than the curses I used to employ. I destroyed most of my relics from Fairy, except for a few priceless items, and I've been focusing on my own world, how I can make it better. We're all so delighted by your moral and emotional growth,
Finn says dryly.
To get to the point, since I freed my automatons, I've had to hire human servants instead. A dreadful bother. It's so difficult to find good help. One of the girls I hired, well, a woman, I suppose, she's about 20.
Just tell us what you need, I say.
This maid I hired turned out to be far more inquisitive than most. I caught her poking around in my workshop a couple days ago. She claimed she was only dusting. I should have fired her on the spot, but I gave her another chance. Then, this morning, I overheard her telling another servant that she'd seen a man with the ears of a rabbit inside a hedge.
A rabbit? Phineas's tone is sharper than usual.
What did he look like? I'll get to that. I planned to investigate what the girl had seen, but events unfolded faster than I expected. 2 hours ago, I felt a disturbance, a shifting of the air, a tingle of fairy magic coupled with a sense of dread. I followed my instincts into the garden, where I saw one of the old oak trees split open at the roots, forming a great black hole. In front of the hole stood a tall, brown-skinned man in a white suit, wearing the mask of a brown rabbit. The inquisitive maid was standing right beside him. I called out to her to warn her, but the masked rabbit looked at me, gave her a shove into the hole, and then leaped down it himself.
Fuck, hisses Finn.
God shit.
He walks a few steps away, sweeping one hand over the lower half of his face.
I take it you know who he is, says Drosselmeyer.
Finn sighs, tilting his head back and closing his eyes.
Yes, the White Rabbit. The very same. I took his brother years ago, Drosselmeyer says. He was one of my first, back when I was still turning my captives to stone. The maid is young, helpless. Her kidnapping may be some kind of clumsy revenge on me. I would hate to know she was suffering and dying because of my old sins. But I've been forbidden by your king from ever entering Faerie again. I must honour that agreement, so I can't go after her myself.
No, you can't. Finn walks closer to the orb. Do you know where the portal took them?
I used the Rat King's staff to perform a location spell, using the residual magic at the spot where the portal closed. I believe it emptied into the heart of Unseelie territory, in or near Malaith.
Malaith? I ask.
The Unseelie city where the Dread Court is located, Finn explains. City of Screams, some call it, or City of Torment.
The chief steward interrupts.
What you're asking is impossible, Drosselmeyer. Trying to rescue a human who is so deep in Unseelie territory, it's madness, especially with the rumours of their new queen and her terrible habits, not to mention her victims wandering the woods unchecked. It's not only the girl I'm concerned about, says Drosselmeyer. During the incident in the garden, I noticed the maid had a book in her hand. I checked my workshop again more thoroughly, and I found something missing. The Tama Olk.
Well, this keeps getting better.
Finn presses a fist to his forehead.
Why in the name of all the old gods did you have that book?
The White Rabbit's brother had it in his satchel when I captured him,
Drosselmeyer replies.
I kept it, of course. I made him yield control of it to me before I turned him to stone. The book was helpful in the development of my transformative curses.
I glance at Finn. What's the Tama Olk?
A compendium of Genesis magic,
Finn replies.
It contains the most powerful formative spells known to the Fae. Some of the Fae have always borne traits or even parts of certain animals, but with the Tama Olk, the Unseelie were created. The first Unseelie were dramatic, purposeful blends of Fae bodies with savage animals in disturbing ways, often without the subject's consent. The results were beings like the Rat King and the others you saw in his lair. In the wrong hands, that book is a terrible weapon.
Drosselmeyer's image in the geode is beginning to flicker and distort, lines of black light skewing aside or disappearing altogether.
Anything else you've conveniently left out of your dire tale of carelessness and stupidity?
Finn asks my godfather.
Just the maid's name, says Drosselmeyer. She's called Alice.
2. Finn. I swore I'd never go back. After what happened to me in the Unseelie Kingdom 3 years ago, after the things I did, what was done to me, I can't. But neither can I allow a mortal woman of 20 years, barely more than a girl, to be the White Rabbit's prey. I know the kinds of things he does to humans, and I know where he'll take her, which is why I have no fucking choice in the matter. I have to go, because I'm the only one who can save her. But I can't leave Clara. What if I die in the Unseelie lands? It seems cruel to promise her a long and happy life with me, only to snatch away that dream. Clara is strong, though. If I died, she would be sad for a while, but she could continue living without me, happy and fulfilled. Humans are resilient, but I... Fuck. I'm selfish. I can't bear having this life of joy in my grasp and letting it go for the sake of some foolish mortal I've never met. Resilient humans, foolish mortals, God stars, I sound like my cousin. Clara's small fingers slide over my shoulders, rustling against the...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?